everybody.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
It's kind of rainy.
Ah, yes, it is. But another podcast, another outfit.
Yeah.
You might be asking why. Why are you wearing your Deerstalker hat? You got your pipe, and you got your Sherlock Holmes outfit, but it's a dress.
That is a good costume.
Yeah. So we actually went to a convention.
Yes, we did. We went to 221 VCon 2018. It was we're actually recording this on Sunday.
Yeah.
April 13th through the 15th in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Atlanta.
Yeah, and they were so nice to invite us to their convention to sort of take a look around and do some press stuff.
Yeah, yeah. The people there were super nice to work with. All the staff was great. All the attendees were great. I think we should break down what the con is. I guess in 2012.
That's correct. 2012.
They started.
Yes, they started actually in a Holiday Inn.
So they've always been kind of in the airport hotels around Atlanta, which is good because I noticed that there was a lot of people from Oregon and Chicago and LA. There are a lot of people that travel there, so I'm sure that makes it really easy for people to show up.
And it shows how good this convention was that people traveled from faraway places. I mean, traveling from Oregon is not cheap.
No.
Yeah, to attend this convention.
Yeah.
So we also talked with the
director. Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. And she gave us some facts. About 300 people pre-registered for this convention, and then they also said that they usually get about 300 people walking in and just signing up. So usually a grand total of 600 people.
600 or so. Yeah. If I had to estimate based on, because, you know, I do event stuff, mm-hmm. have to estimate crowds and such. I wouldn't be surprised if they had more than that this year.
Yeah.
Because it seems like there were more people than just 600.
Yeah, I mean, and she was giving us a rough estimation.
Right, because I hadn't done their counts yet. And
yeah.
I still have last day badge walk-ins.
Yeah, and again, you know, it was mainly a solid number for the pre-reg.
Right.
The walk-ins are always, you have to add them all.
Kind of estimate.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's a really impressive count for a con, especially as niche as this con is, because it's billed as something that focuses mainly on Sherlock, Arthur Conan Doyle, all the media that goes along with that.
Sir.
Yeah, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah,
yes.
He got knighted.
I forgot about that. So a lot of the panels, sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right.
A lot of the panels, she was saying, are fan panels?
Yeah, usually they try to do 50-50.
Yeah.
50% for fan, 50% where they kind of just set it up. So there is a lot of variation where you get, you know, focused on Sherlock, and then there are some panels where it's like we went to a Steven Universe one, which doesn't really have much to do with Sherlock, but...
But it's something that a fan of Sherlock... was able to formulate a panel or a series of fans that were able to formulate a panel around this topic. So it was obviously some sort of overlay.
Yeah, and, you know, there was demand for it because when we went there were quite a few butts and seats.
Yes, yeah. It was really full, especially considering it was the first panel on the first day.
Yeah, it was on Friday at the 5.
Yeah.
The con started at 5. What was your first going into this convention? What did you kind of expect? Did you expect anything or?
So I expected, mainly, I guess because I saw about it at Conjuration and also at, Anachrocon.
Yeah.
Like in my head, I guess I was, or not at Anachrocon, but Anachrocon was the last thing I went to. Mm-hmm. I guess I had in my head it would be way more dry than it actually was. Like more like literary stuff like Arthur Conan Doyle and Basil Rathbone and I think that's his name, Basil Rathbone.
Yeah.
Some of the older Sherlock stuff, I was obviously expecting the Benedict Cumberbatch stuff.
Yeah. And
that's kind of there.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I expected too. I expected a little bit more, like you said, dry. But pleasantly surprised that there was quite an interesting mix.
It is not dry at all. It's a very, very fun and out there convention to be part of.
Yeah, and I'm super glad that we were able to have the experience to go and participate in it. Also, that also shows you that those booths at different cons really do work. I mean, I've gone to many of cons and seen, like, flyers or business cards for, you know, cons around the Atlanta area, and they always pique my interest.
Yeah, yeah. So, because the way that I found out about this was when I was at Conjuration last year, I happened to be just walking by a table and saw last year's program for 221 VCon, and I was looking at it, and I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I want to reach out to them and see if they do anything for press so we can go to it and experience the convention and maybe talk about it and open up some new ears to something different.
Yeah, because I didn't actually know about this con until Zach approached me.
Yes.
And again, you know, wasn't 100% sure what I was expecting. But I was super happy that we were able to have the opportunity to come.
Yes.
So, you want to kind of dive in at the beginning of our experience?
Yeah, sure. We'll just go through the schedule then, I guess. Basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's great. Well, first we went to...
Like we said, Steven Universe.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. I know that you haven't seen all of the seasons.
Yeah. So the Steven Universe panel, I went into it because I was like, well, I don't have anything else at 5. And I've seen the first, like, couple of seasons, not knowing how many seasons there were.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, I also do not care about spoilers. Like, I think there's way too much media for me to consume out there by myself, so... Maybe I'll end up watching it anyway. And because I have a cool
memory,
I tend to not remember spoilers. So.
Yeah. And you definitely should. I am current on Steven Universe. I think that show is fantastic. It makes me feel the feels.
Oh, yeah, it's good. The only reason I stopped watching it is because, you know, my wife would have it on in the background in the mornings. Getting ready for work and stuff. And, it was just through YouTube, I think. And so they stopped updating YouTube,
I think? Yeah. I mean, I mainly consume it on Amazon Prime. I do pay for the seasons. And, you know, they're so good. I'm happy to pay for them to support the creators of it.
Yeah.
So I was going in there, and I was really happy. So there were three panelists. One who actually came from Oregon.
Yes.
Who was, and these three people were very passionate about it.
Yes.
They had everything pretty much organized, and I felt like it was a really good panel. I enjoyed it. There was a lot of back and forth with the actual audience. We talked about the seasons, then we talked about our particular theories, because Steven Universe really does lend itself to you kind of guessing what's going to happen. I know that Rebecca Sugar, who is the creator of it, has the entire story written out. She has a beginning to an ending, and...
Oh, so she's showrunner as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so she knows what's going to happen, so all the particular episodes, even if it's an episode where you don't think much is happening, it usually gets referred back to in a later episode.
Right.
Which is great because you can sort of connect everything, and it makes rewatching it really, really better. Just because you get to pick up on these things that you probably missed on your initial viewing.
Right.
Yeah. So there was a lot of theory crafting, and, yeah, I really
enjoyed it. A lot of opinion. Now, it was funny not knowing what was going on because where I've seen, you know, Steven is a, and pardon any rain and thunder in the background. It is raining, like I said, so.
Yeah. but it shouldn't be picking up too much.
Yeah. The thing with Steven Universe that I've seen is, the weirdest thing was the cat finger one, the kitty cat yeah. fingers, which I love, because I love weird body horror stuff.
Yeah.
But it's all mainly been on Earth, and then, well, I guess this might be spoilers.
Yeah.
But anyway, they start talking about random things that are happening later in the series, and I was just like, this is not the show that I started. Is this the same show?
Yeah. and with the show, the character sort of develops and grows older.
Right.
And becomes a little bit more mature, takes on a little bit more responsibility. Yeah, you're not just stuck on Earth. There's other places that get explored, other lore that sort of gets explored. And again, it's a fantastic series. The panelists treated it with great respect, which was great, because, again, they were super passionate. One of the panelists, the person from Oregon, actually showed up at the costume exhibition as one of the gyms.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Paradox. So she was in full, like, body makeup and everything, and having done that once before, that is some dedication.
Yes.
So, it was great, and there was such a strong energy. Again, having that first panel on the first day of a convention, it's always difficult because, you know, people aren't getting there at the very beginning. People don't have that energy that's been hyped up. But I did not see any of those problems at this panel. There were a lot of people at the panel, and there was a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, I'm going to let you take this one.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, because I don't know how much we should delve into this necessarily, because we did go to the ABO panel, and what intrigued me, one, is that I have no idea, or I had no idea what ABO was.
Neither did I.
The way it was worded in the program, it was very much, it was very kind of vague. Yeah. And, you know, it just has ABO, and then it's 18 and up. And so I figured, well, it's maybe it's,
yeah.
It's, yeah, let me just, it says, what is Omegaverse? Where did it come from? 18 and up, ID required. And that was it. And so I was like, well, what is the Omegaverse?
Yeah.
No idea what it is. I had an inkling that it was probably adult-oriented fan fiction, which it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I learned a bunch of interesting new places, interesting new tropes and writing that's out there, different styles of writing.
Yes.
I also finally figured out what John Locke is.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
fan fiction pairings of Watson and Holmes
yeah.
together, which I had no idea. Yeah. But because it's 18 and up, we'll just gloss over this. If you're over 18, I guess, check it out. But
yeah,
we're trying to keep this review G or PG, so we'll just skip on to the next topic that we went to. Other than that, I will say that the ABO panelists obviously knew their stuff.
Yeah.
The fans were very passionate about it.
They had an author there who had published a book.
Yeah, one of the panelists had a book published, and a publisher of other types of literature was in the audience and was very open to looking at submissions from people or giving advice on people who wanted to do their own publishing. So yeah. it was a very DIY sort of setup. Very interesting panel.
And on a tangent on that, all of the attendees were super nice.
Yes.
There was definitely a camaraderie and a community in there. I know with some of these bigger cons, it can get kind of chaotic. It can get not dangerous, but kind of weird, where there are people who are overstepping their boundaries.
But not here. Like, yeah. This place, the entire convention was a safe space.
Yes. And even in their program, they have a list of particular rules, particular things that, you know, they promote.
Which is, yeah, things they promote, things that are behaviors that are just not allowed at the convention.
Yeah.
Just as a disclaimer of hey, if you do this, we will take your badge and
yeah, we will kick
get
you out.
Kicked out. Yeah. Which is good. Like, it's always good to have that spelled out. I don't know if we need to go through all of them.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are fairly standard. A lot of them are like, you know, we're not going to post bail.
yeah, which is strange.
You can't sleep in the halls or lobby.
Yeah.
The thing about peace bonding. Mm-hmm. They're recording panels without consent.
Yeah. It states that it's a safe place.
Yes. It does say that. I'm looking for it now.
Yeah, where this is a community of like-minded people, and it's a safe area where you don't need to have that scared feeling of being persecuted or being made fun of particular things.
Oh, I see. Here, it's not in under the rules and policies. It's actually the very first page of the program.
Okay.
It says it's dedicated to providing a harassment-free con experience for everyone, regardless of gender, gender identity and expression, sexual orientation, disability, physical appearance, body size, race, or religion.
Yeah.
We do not tolerate harassment of convention participants in any form. Convention participants violating these rules may be sanctioned or expelled from the convention without a refund at the sole discretion of the convention organizers.
Yeah.
And then a link to their harassment policy, so if I'm not sure why there's a link to it on the website, but just to cover all the bases, I guess. But
yeah,
that's really refreshing and good that it's upfront, because I know Dragon Con's programming doesn't really adhere to that.
It's kind of a gray zone.
It's
And I will also say it was really refreshing to see that at the restrooms, because it was at a hotel. You know, they are gender hotel, are gender restrooms where, you know, you have your male restroom and your female restroom. The con set up signs that say
all genders welcome.
All genders welcome.
So which this is refreshing to see, because not all conventions do that.
Mm-hmm. So this place was definitely a very nice, safe area.
Yeah.
So I definitely applaud them for that.
Yeah.
It was really good to see that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess the takeaway that I would like to share is always be open to just going to a panel that piques your interest. Stay through the entire thing.
Yeah.
I
mean, and you learn things. Like,
yeah, because you learn things. Like, I had no idea what this was going into it.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, it might spark interest in something that you hadn't thought of.
Mm-hmm.
It might, you know, you might get curious on particular things.
Right.
Again, we came with a very open mind.
Sure.
I mean, both of us are pretty, you know, open to new experiences and things along those lines. So,
yeah,
and you might find out something about yourself that you didn't know. Or you might just have an interesting story to tell people.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so from there, we moved on to the next panel.
Queer characters in video games.
Yeah, which was very interesting, again, because I'm a big video game player, and so is Zach.
Yeah.
And as we were waiting for this panel, I think we were trying to think of particular characters, because it is kind of hard to see that representation in mainstream games.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could think of a couple of examples, but, you know, Life is Strange, it's not very spelled out. It's not really a plot point, and there's no attention drawn to any of it. So it's really hard to say if it's just characters being coded a certain way to appeal to a certain audience, or if it's actually intentional.
Yeah.
And,
spoiler, if you haven't played or finished.
Stay out of spoilers.
Okay. Undertale has characters that are specifically gay. And I've been playing Undertale, so yeah, that's definitely
one that
refreshing and nice to see too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they determined also that depending on how you read their wording, Nintendo has referred to Link as non-binary.
Yeah.
So, that's an interesting step forward, especially considering
it's a Japanese game.
Japanese culture has some taboo areas still with bias. With some of the things, and so a lot of the things in video games are cultural, which one of the panelists pointed out.
Yeah, the panel was
that like you can't give the same standards of Western ideas to things like Monster Hunter or
Games that originate in Japan, like Persona. Persona was a big game, and there is a character, I haven't played Persona, but they were talking about a particular character who is heavily hinted that is gay, but never is outright said.
Yeah.
And
she pointed out the panelists pointed out that it may not be obvious to us, but there may be cultural signifiers in that game.
True. I mean, when the game gets ported from Japan to America, it does have to go through some sort of translation. And you can get, themes and ideas lost in translation.
Right.
It was a really, again, another interesting panel that was quite full. It was interesting to see. So a lot of these games that aren't AAA, a lot of indie games, really do broach that subject. There's quite a few. The biggest one is probably Dream Daddies, which is a creation coming from, the Game Grumps studio, which is...
It was kickstarted, right?
I think it might have been kickstarted. I'm not 100% sure. But it's a great game. I personally haven't played it, but I've seen playthroughs of it. And it doesn't really, put a big old sign saying, these guys are gay, look at them. It just shows, being a normal dad.
Well, yeah, it normalizes being a...
Two dads. Having a kid.
Yeah, two men raising children together.
Yeah.
The whole point, Dream Daddy is a dating sim.
It is, where you're trying to find your good old dream daddy.
Yeah, you're a dad, and you're also dating, looking to pair mm-hmm. with another dad who also has children. So, and there's different types, there's different characters.
Character creation on Dream Daddy is fantastic.
Yeah.
It gives you really no limits, and I applaud them for that kind of innovation.
It's a game that's definitely in my Steam wish list because, like you, I've heard reviews and I've seen playthroughs, and it looks really interesting. And I'm not normally a dating sim person.
That's not really
the style of game that I'm interested in, but. I don't know, there's something about that game that is like, oh, this is an interesting take on
what
is normally not very progressive genre of games.
Well, that and the art style is interesting, and there's a bunch of dad puns. Like, it is dad pun all over the place.
Yeah, dad jokes abound in that, apparently.
Dad jokes. And as we're becoming older,
I
love those dad jokes.
I do love those dad jokes. But the panel itself was... very informative. The panelists all knew what they were talking about. They knew their subject. They knew terminology. They
mm-hmm.
were able to accurately pick up on and discuss things that modern video games just don't cover very well. It's always good to know that you're not the only ones that notice. There's not a whole lot of representation here with this character or that game.
And there were interesting games to kind of make note of. I know that I have in my notes Dragon Age Inquisition. There were a lot of interesting situations that Dragon Age puts you through.
Yeah, which, again, we'll stay clear of spoilers.
Yeah.
But I will say that Dragon Age Inquisition is on my... It's on my shelf right over there.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting to be played as soon as I finish Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah, where there's particular characters where there's a character on your party and he has a partner who is also his particular gender. Yeah. So if you keep on calling him by the wrong gender, that character keeps on getting angrier and angrier until he will leave your party. So there's like
consequences to misgendering people.
Yeah.
Which is good, especially for a game like, because Dragon Age Inquisition is a huge AAA game.
Yeah.
It's normally in the realm of indie games that LGBT stuff is actually handled, mm-hmm. and AAAs tend to kind of not really touch it because they want to sell as many units as possible.
Yeah.
And there's a stigma there.
And when you do have that ability to romance people, like with Mass Effect, you become hero gender. Like, you can have...
Hero sexual.
Where you can have sex with anybody you want. There's no consequences.
And the implication there is because you're the big bad hero, everyone just wants to get with you, which is not the case. Like, it's refreshing. It would be interesting to see a game where you can... approach people and then be like, not interested, sorry.
Bobby. Yeah.
Just because you're the big bad hero does not mean you're entitled to it. So the fandom burlesque was next.
Oh, yeah. We did end up taking a break, a 2-hour break, just getting food and getting some drinks.
Yeah, talking to people.
Yeah.
The burlesque was put on by Fandom Nerdlesque.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a charity event. The tickets were $20 at the door.
Yeah.
And the charity event went to the Beacon Society.
Oh, okay.
According to the program, which I'm not sure what the Beacon Society is, but if it's the subject of a charity from 221 BeCon and this group of burlesque performers, I'm sure it's a worthy cause.
Yeah. And, it was... Quite an event.
Yeah. No, it was a great show. The performers were great. They were interesting costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
you could tell that they spent a lot of time on their costumes.
Yeah.
They
a lot spent, of time on the performance.
Yeah.
The choreography, on the routine. Their routine. Mm-hmm. Everything was great. It was phenomenal.
Then we came on Sunday.
Saturday. To Wakanda Forever. This was focused entirely on the Black Panther movie.
Yeah, gosh. And it was an hour, and we still didn't have enough time to discuss.
Yeah, like one of the panelists even mentioned that she's just like, we've only hit a couple points on my phone. Like, she tried to have a points of discussion.
Yeah, and it was awesome because at the end of the panel, she was like, if you want to keep on discussing this, I will step outside of this room and I will continue this conversation.
And she was there like 20 minutes later when we walked past after
grabbing something. That's passion, right there.
That is passion for a property. I know, with the amount of people in the panel who, because at the start of the panel, they ask how many people have seen Black Panther. Mm-hmm. And you know, pretty much everyone raised their hand. When the lady, I think who was moderating, actually left because she hadn't seen it and didn't want any spoilers.
Yeah.
And then they kept progressively asking for higher numbers. Have you seen it twice? Have you seen it three times? Have you seen it six times? And I felt like a schlub because I had only seen it once.
Yeah.
I had to put my hand down immediately and it was just like, oh wow.
And there's so much more that you can kind of pick out at second viewings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they touched on a couple of topics that I didn't even realize. Particular things about, like, the color. So, we don't want to get into spoilers, so.
Yeah.
A particular scene, each three individual color, or individual characters were wearing a specific color
associated with their garbs that they were wearing, and it all represented the black, green, and red.
Which I didn't notice
At all in the theater. I definitely can't wait for, I think it comes out May 15th. Blu-ray. Can't wait to pick it up and watch through it and watch all of those special features, because supposedly there's a 4.5-hour long cut of that movie.
Oh, wow.
And Marvel was like, we're not putting out a 4.5-hour
movie. I'd also like to hear about the director's commentary, too. That's definitely one where you would want to watch it for the director's commentary.
Because, yeah, like, Ryan Coogler knows his stuff, and surprisingly, he's, like, 30.
Yeah, I didn't even know that either.
He's younger than us.
Ah, I know, yeah. God. Jeez. And look at all he did.
Yeah.
Look at where...
Very, very fantastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that was another panel. It was actually funny when they were asking about how many people saw a movie a certain amount of times, because these two ladies were sitting next to each other, and one... Lady A lowers her hand after how many people have seen it 7 times, and the lady sitting next to her still has her hand up, She kind of turns to her and goes, "When did you see it without me?"
Yeah. Betrayal.
Betrayal.
Top 10 anime betrayals now.
Yeah, but yeah, no, they the panelists definitely went into the comic roots.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the problems with the way it was created, obviously, but,
yeah.
You know, still, I think rightly gave props to, in 1966, coming out with an African-American superhero, or an African superhero.
Yeah.
And
again, just to state, this was 10 o'clock on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. First one of the day.
It was in the biggest room. And it was packed.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had folks there, and a lot of people were there just to talk about this, which is, you know, shows you the drawing power of Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the next panel was Sherlock Holmes in anime. Really interesting. It was really interesting to me because I was not aware of Sherlock Holmes in anime. Sherlock Holmes was popular in Japan.
Yeah.
And I was happy to see the shout out at the beginning of the presentation where the panelist pointed out, yes, this is Edgar Allan Rampo. He translated Sherlock Holmes into Japanese and brought it over to Japan, which is, it's like, yes, because I also knew who that author was.
Yeah.
I knew about his contribution.
I didn't know that he took his name from Edgar
Allan Poe.
Yeah. I did not know that.
And yeah, it's what Edgar Allan Poe would sound like in Japanese.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. He has some horror stories that are really creepy.
Yeah.
And, but...
and again, this panel was really great. It had a lot of interesting folks on there. It had they had lots of examples. They brought a projector to show, you know, some of the anime and like titles.
I was keeping notes in my phone of different anime that I needed to check out.
Yeah, there were again a lot of things that I didn't know had influence from Sherlock.
Yeah, and I mean they were very, very thorough. There were some anime where the panelists would pull it up and go, and in this scene the character should dress like Sherlock Holmes and Watson.
Yeah.
And
that's about it.
that was it. Like, and they
pulled it was a gag.
It was a gag. It was a sight gag, because apparently those sight gags still translate into It's cross language barriers.
And there's definitely one that I really want to check out. It's actually, I believe, Miyazaki.
Oh, yeah, Sherlock Hound.
I had no idea about that, where basically they took the character and made him into a basset hound.
A dog.
A dog, okay.
There was another one where Sherlock Holmes and Watson have died and been reincarnated, and Sherlock Holmes is reincarnated as a dog, and Watson is reincarnated as a boy.
Yeah, who owns the dog.
Who owns the dog. And the little boy that is Watson, his older sister is the reincarnation of Irene Adler. So the Sherlock Holmes dog has this crush on his sister because... It's anime.
Anime, okay. You know.
You know.
Also, there was that other one, too, where it's kind of a mixture of Sherlock Holmes and Frankenstein, where they're, like, reincarnating.
Oh, yeah, government-licensed reanimation.
Yeah.
Although they said that Sherlock Holmes is only in it for, like,
A second. Yeah, but it focuses more on Watson being, you know, the doctor that he is and going into the government work and trying to figure out, Dr. Frankenstein's original recipe to create these undead servants, where you have an undead servant who actually retains their memory and their ability to function as, a normal human being, as most of these undead things are pretty much just basically slaves.
Anyway, there were a lot of really interesting things. I have a huge note in my phone notes.
Yeah, so I had to check out a couple of these really interesting things. Yeah. There was even that one, girl squad of different particular...
Oh, yeah, the magical girl.
Yeah.
There's a magical girl one where they're all going to school to learn to be detectives.
And each particular character is named after a famous detective.
Yeah, so there's a Hercule, mm-hmm. there's a Sherlock, there's...
A bunch of different, though.
Lupin?
No, I don't think. It was a bunch of different ones.
Yeah, there were a bunch of different ones, and they all had a special power, and it's I've never heard of that.
And I find it funny that the character who has the Sherlock name is the ditzy one who has no idea
what's going on,
who's happening. Yeah, who's the victim versus who should I accuse, and she's just randomly accusing things.
Yeah,
but
it was you.
Yeah, but she has the ability to manipulate things with her mind.
Yeah,
yeah. So I thought that was interesting. I didn't think that Sherlock Holmes made that big of an impression in Japan, but it's interesting to see that.
Yeah, especially in manga, because they were saying a lot of the manga are just the short stories formatted in a storyboard type animation. And sold just as individual manga issues. So, you could do Scrub Study in Pink, or Hound of the Baskervilles, Next was the Geek Versus podcast,
which
is a podcast I've been turned on to now. I'm going to add it to my subscriptions. And
they were really cool. It was a panel that they had set up. That it was sort of trivia.
Yeah.
They were introducing it as a trivia where they were two of their podcasters were competing with each other.
Yeah, and I think the third one was the announcer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the chemistry was fantastic between them.
Yeah.
It was really nice. They brought up people from the audience, which was very fun, of course. Yours truly had to
volunteer.
Man, this is PG. Can I?
Yeah, no, we'll skip. If you're interested in what happened, why don't you guys go to the Geek Versus Facebook? Because I saw the lady take a picture of what she drew.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if she posts it.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So if you're interested, go to the Geek Versus Podcast Facebook. Yeah. They have a discussion on there.
It was definitely fun. And when I went up there, I was basically doing Fictionary, so I was drawing stuff. One thing might have been crude.
Yeah.
Anyway, but while I was up there, I got an opportunity to sort of talk with her, and she was super cool.
Betty.
Mm-hmm. She was really cool. We were just joking with each other, making each other laugh, and it was great to have that sort of experience where we're both kind of riffing off each other and stuff like that.
Especially in an interactive type panel like that, a heavily interactive trivia thing. Yeah.
And I was laughing so hard. a lot of people were, it was just, that energy was high. They kept it up. Mm-hmm. They kept the funnies going.
Yeah.
They were hidden with all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to sort of, because I guess they have about 1,000 listeners.
They have 1,000 followers on Facebook, is what I saw.
Right, right, yeah.
When I joined, because I immediately went on and joined. I was like, yeah. Okay, these guys are funny.
Yeah, these guys are hilarious.
We saw Tony, the guy that was on the one of the later panels we went to. Mm-hmm. He was the Geek Versus guy.
Yeah.
And he was also on the Wakanda panel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just seems like a really laid-back dude, and the show seems interesting, so I just went ahead and liked their page. So yeah. Go there and like them.
And it's nice to see and talk to them how they grew to that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, 1,000 is quite an achievement.
A lot of people, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was just fun to interact with them, and I was happy to see them so open. They were happy to sort of talk with people.
Talk with us outside of the panel, yeah. After the panels.
Yeah, and they were really approachable, and they were funny. So
yeah.
It was definitely, and I got to perform. And
which you love.
Oh, God, I love performing. I love, you know, performing, making people laugh.
Yeah.
It definitely puts a twinkle in my eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, we ended up split up. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. It was hard. It was really hard.
It was real hard because we went to all the other panels together.
I know. I was thinking about Zach as I was sitting in the panel, wondering what he was doing, if he was looking at the same moon I was. Do you want to talk about yours? Sure.
So I went to the panel focusing on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is... interesting. I mean, it's kind of related in that there are characters who have both played Sherlock in the MCU now. You know, Benedict Cumberbatch and Robert Downey Jr. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of related, but I was interested in seeing what they would be talking about. And a lot of it was focused on the Avengers Infinity War trailer.
Which is going to be good. Going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. There were some fan theories shared. Mm-hmm. Lots of reactions. People were talking about their favorite movies. Everyone in the audience. And it was more of the type of back and forth between the audience and the panelists that I like, where, you know, the panelists will pose questions to the audience and then people get to share their experiences. Just a really conversational panel, almost, like, just hearing people's stories around, like, oh yeah, I have this friend and he likes the DC movies and so I told him we can't be friends anymore.
Aw.
Ha ha. Yeah, funny things like that.
Yeah.
Everyone was just exuberantly excited about this. And also, I sat right behind the best Doctor Strange cosplayer I have ever seen.
Yes. I also saw this cosplayer too. He was on point.
Yeah. So yeah, that was mine. It was mainly just sharing fan theories, talking about favorites, things you wanted to see coming up, things that you wish wouldn't happen or would happen differently, and anything to do with the MCU. Oh. Which I'm a big fan of the MCU. I have all of them. I get them all when they come out and see all of them in theaters because I love them. So, yeah.
Okay.
That was me.
Yeah. I ended up going to the drug use during the Victorian era. It was the bigger one. It was in the larger room. And they actually had... one of the main guests there, a author who wrote quite a few books.
Lindsay Fay.
Yeah. And she brought along one of her good friends who was a licensed pharmacist who also did a lot of research into drugs and things like that. And they mainly focused on a lot of the drugs that Sherlock did in his book, which was really interesting. So the big four are opiates, hash, alcohol, and then cocaine.
Yeah.
Which I did not know. And then they discussed about the 7% in the book. The
7% solution?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the book, they talked about how Sherlock used a 7% solution of cocaine to, you know, help keep his mind sharp when he didn't have any particular cases going on. So that's
an interesting way to use your time.
Gosh. But the big thing was they were saying 7% will kill you. That
will straight out, yeah, 7% cocaine will, yeah,
under the ground. And it was interesting because somebody had brought up the interesting comment of like, well, what happens if that was 7% of not 100 millimeters of water? Maybe it was something else. And the professional there, who was the pharmacist, said, no, I have a lot of these particular books from the Victorian era. And when they mention 7%, it's always 7% of 100 millimeters of water. So, yeah. So that was interesting just to be like, yes, this was the amount that Sherlock was using.
That's a lot.
It is. And the interesting thing is Doyle was a...
he was a doctor.
He was a doctor before he started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were saying, well, if he was a doctor, wouldn't he known that 7% would just kill a person? It would even kill a small horse if you injected that much.
I mean, that's a lot of cocaine.
It is a lot of cocaine. It's like cocaine sitting at the bottom of the particular solution, just like sugar at the bottom of...
Oh, sweet tea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing was Doyle pretty much didn't care.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. when he was in his writing phase, he just wrote. He didn't really, like, check himself. So
research,
he was just like,
anything like that.
7%, that's a good number. And he just continued. it was interesting to find out that Doyle, his father was an alcoholic. I did not know this.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, he was an alcoholic, and a lot of his writing of Sherlock's addiction was sort of a way of self-treatment.
Really?
He would write this out, yeah, and he would sort of be able to talk about it. That's why he didn't make Sherlock an alcoholic, because it would have hit too close to home, but he made him an addict for something else, just so he could sort of get that treatment of him, you know, that therapeutic treatment of writing about what you're kind of dealing with, because he had to deal with this. One of the famous things is his father had a pocket watch, and he had the DTs when he was trying to go through withdrawal, and the pocket watch ended up getting scraped because he was shaking all the time, and would shake the watch against particular
items.
Yeah. So, God, that's crazy. And I also found out that alcohol was a treatment for diabetes.
Yes.
So if you couldn't have your steak and potatoes, you would get treated with distilled alcohol because it would be able to regulate you. But then you would become an alcoholic. So you had that problem.
Well, that's weird. Well, yeah, I guess that was before insulin, so...
Yeah.
Because insulin is fairly recent, so yeah.
Yeah, so it was a really interesting panel. It was a lot of facts that were just really cool that I had no idea. Watson even makes a line about to Sherlock about how his brain is too beautiful to keep on using drugs like this. Because Sherlock's thing was like, I don't have a case to keep my brain active.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do cocaine to just keep it,
I'm just going to fire nitrogen into my brain.
And the interesting thing is he also did morphine, which particular opiates really slow down your brain, really deteriorate your brain.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't actually be keeping his brain active. It would be doing the opposite.
Yeah.
It was interesting to find out that a lot of these particular drugs were, it was like a social aspect of it. Like after, dinner, you might do some cocaine, because that was the thing.
Yeah.
But you would never smoke any sort of opiates in a fine dining area or your house, because it smells. That's why you'd go into the opium dens, and the opium dens would just be like where all the lower class people would be smoking.
Well, and
those.
It's also, there is also a racial divide there, mm-hmm. if I understand it right, where you know, cocaine was not made illegal until
20th
century, maybe.
Yeah.
And the Chinese immigrants were the ones that were bringing opium.
Yeah. So, well, it's that whole the triangle, the trade triangle.
Yeah.
And there were wars fought over opiates, the opium wars,
right?
Of, 1890.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's also why you wouldn't. Another reason you would not smoke opium in a restaurant is because the British were extremely racist.
Yes, and you know, with the cocaine, they were injecting it in themselves. So getting a hypodermic needle was expensive. Getting, you know, the particular right formula was expensive.
Yeah.
It was a signifier of higher class.
Right.
Because you could have enough money to do all this. With opiates, all you needed was to smoke it.
As a side note, have you ever seen old hypodermic needles?
No, I have not.
So, because they couldn't, the gauges on those needles are terrifying.
Yeah.
It's basically, here's this round thing, I'm going to push it through your arm. Have fun.
Yeah, I assume those things are nasty.
Yeah.
It was a lot of good information, and it was really, like, fun. They kept us engaged, but I have an entire page of just notes that I did not know, and it was really interesting to find out. There wasn't a lot of back and forth, just because they were giving a lot of information. People did ask questions and things like that at the end, but I felt like that was one of the most interesting panels that I went to, just because all of the experience and conversation. It was interesting, the author said that she had written a book, and she used one of her characters to be addicted to cocaine as well, and used a hypodermic needle, but she said it too early into the future, where that hadn't even been invented. The hypodermic needle hadn't been invented, so he had looked through it, and he was like, well, you have to change your, like, setting, because this can't be, or change the addiction of the particular character. Sure. Which I believe she did. I think she changed it to alcohol, because alcohol has been around for a long time.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that particular panel.
Well, good.
Yeah. So after that, we sat around. We got food. They had a couple, well, not a couple. They had one food truck there.
Yeah. The hotel had a food truck there.
Yeah. The hotel had a food truck. And the hotel also had a restaurant in, I think, two restaurants in there.
Yeah, there was a restaurant and a Starbucks.
Yeah. So we went to the food truck, we sat, we ate. And again, it was, people were super friendly. We could sit down, we could have a conversation with someone
because the hotel had tables outside.
Yeah.
In front of the food truck, you could just kind of sit down with people and talk with them.
Which was really cool. We talked to one of the,
security members,
who gave us a bunch of information. We also went and we demoed a game.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So we demoed a game by Kiefer Arts Inc.
Mm-hmm.
Called Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty's Network.
Yes.
Basically, you play as the main characters from the Holmes novels. So, one person will be Sherlock, one person will be Watson. I think there's Lestrade, Hudson, Mycroft, and
the inspector character you played.
No, I said Lestrade.
Oh, okay.
There was a sixth one. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so basically each character has a different power.
Yeah.
I think Watson can never be kidnapped by Moriarty.
Yeah, he covers two squares instead of one square.
Yeah.
And he can never be covered, yeah. It was a, where you build the board. You pick particular things you want to investigate, be them locations, mm-hmm. be them witnesses,
informants, clues,
things along those lines. And when you pick up that certain tile, and each tile is shaped differently,
and has different patterns that you have to match to corresponding patterns on other connections. So, like, you could hook up an informant to a clue if as long as the two patterns on the edge where they touch meet.
Yeah, where one might be a cross pattern where the other one is like a checkered pattern. Yeah. So you would have to match up two checker patterns. And then you sort of create a board, and you have six crimes, and you're basically trying to connect those crimes to Moriarty.
Yeah. Now, Moriarty, after each person takes a turn, gets four... So however many cases are left on the board unsolved, mm-hmm. He gets that many cards to pull. And so when
from he pulls, his deck.
Right. So he'll pull the deck, or the cards, and go, okay... I'm taking this clue off the board. Is this clue on the board? Yes, it is, but there's someone on top of it, so they're protecting it, so he can't take that.
Yeah.
If he's on another clue and it's not there, he can just remove that, which might make your case fall apart.
Yeah, so again, it's good to like connect it with multiple things, but it's also interesting because when they get separated, they're quote-unquote orphaned, and you can't actually get back to that part unless you try to connect it again. There's also cards where he kidnaps you.
Yeah.
I remember in the demo, he ended up kidnapping two of
us. Me and Mycroft.
Yeah. And, it was definitely a very interesting game. I know that the creator was there. She was mm-hmm. there, demoing and trying to sell the game, which, you know.
More power to her for running a demo while also running her table.
Yeah, it's...
That was impressive.
Yeah, that's dedication right there. And I really had a good time with the game. There was... We had a full seat. All six of us were able to play it.
Yeah.
Well, six people
including
from the...
Including
her from the convention. And it was just a really nice experience.
Yeah.
We didn't die. We actually solved everything. So
yeah, we solved everything in one go round. And she was saying that
she was helping. We started off at the easy difficulty.
Yeah, and she was saying
just
if you want to make it harder, just add more cases.
Yeah.
At once, because obviously that means that Moriarty gets more cards and can mess with your investigation much easier.
And we did this variant where we drew two cards and chose the better of the two.
Yeah.
So there's definitely ways to change it to up the difficulty. But since it was a demo game and she didn't want us, you know, we didn't want to be stuck there forever. She wanted it to go fast, so she made it pretty easy for us.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, that
not to say that we aren't smart, because we are super smart. We can solve all those crimes.
I really wanted to pick up a copy, but with all the panels that we were going to, I think the dealer room closed. But I will be going to her website. We'll throw that up in the show notes.
Yeah, there might be some discussion with her. Maybe later.
Because she seemed amenable to, you know, being contacted and interviewed and help, you know, push your product through, like, a Skype interview or something like that. So maybe you guys will hear from her in the future.
Maybe. Or maybe we smell, so she won't want to talk to us.
Well, it's through Skype, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, Skype smells.
That's it?
Yeah.
No. No, it does not. So after that, mm-hmm. we did the, I went to the Watson's Through Time.
Yeah, we separated again because we were like, we need some time apart. I think we need to grow apart a little bit. So, yeah, you went to a Watson Through Time.
Yeah, so it was a panel that basically looked at the different ways that Watson has been portrayed. And one of the things that I guess I knew in the back of my mind, but I didn't know or even really stop to consider, is that one of the panels was making the point was when the first movies were coming out, Watson is just removed entirely from the story. Like, he's not there at all. And the reason for that is you don't need Watson if it's a movie, because Watson is usually the narrator in the story.
True.
So you don't need a narrator in a movie.
Yeah.
And so it usually, in their early, early portrayals, it was usually Sherlock and whatever attractive actress was for hire at that point.
Ah.
for it to be his love interest or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you see different nuances as the character changes and is portrayed by different actors. So, like,
okay.
You know, the first one was just kind of a heavy-set guy with a big mustache. Just, like, harumphed. Right?
What kind of hat did he have?
One of those bowler hats.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of the panelists was saying he moved into what she likes to call Pretty Watson, which, you know, is Robert Duvall in the 7% Solution movie. Jude Law apparently is the prettiest Watson.
Oh. Who's your favorite Watson?
My favorite Watson?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like Martin Freeman as Watson.
Yeah.
Those
two just have good chemistry.
They do have good chemistry. I like Jude Law's portrayal because Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law play off of each other very well.
Yeah.
Because I normally don't like Jude Law.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Well, one of the other interesting things she pointed out is it's interesting to point out that as Watson becomes more of a pronounced character and mm-hmm. a more strong character and more to do with the story.
Yeah.
Sherlock, the Sherlock that he's paired with is usually becomes more and more broken. So like you see Robert Downey Jr. is just like a stumbling mess of a drug addict.
Yeah.
He's getting in fights to like in underground boxing matches to like make up rent because he blows it all on opium.
Yeah.
And you know, in the BBC Sherlock with Cumberbatch, you know, he's the high functioning sociopath. Like he doesn't really realize that other people are other distinct individuals. He's not good at interacting with people at all.
Yeah, and kind of going back to, because it's interesting, drug is a big kind of like character factor of Sherlock.
Yeah.
And going back to the drugs in a Victorian age panel that I went to, it was interesting to see like the portrayal of drugs on TV, where like when you're using it, it's kind of like not socially acceptable, but kind of acceptable. Like, oh, look, that guy's just using drugs and he's having fun and things like that. But when you show like the addicted side of drugs, it's a lot, people can't really handle that because it's that dirty side of it where you will go into a boxing match to like fight for drugs.
To fight for your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, super interesting, but sorry.
Tangent. Oh, no, tangents are fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was an interesting panel that brought to light certain issues that I had never really noticed about
Watson.
Portrayals of Watson and Sherlock.
Did you guys talk about Lucy Liu's Watson? Or
no. Yeah, we did. Joan Watson?
Yeah, Joan Watson.
Yeah, I don't keep up with that show, so I wasn't really following. Like, they were talking about the way that she's dressed a lot and how it's kind of masculine, but still feminine and pretty. And
interesting.
There was debate on whether she fell into the Pretty Watson category. And I think the panelists, if I was reading the room correctly, determined that she was an attractive Watson, but because she's not Jude Law, she's not Pretty Watson. Was my takeaway from the conversation.
But
which was interesting.
I didn't know that they dressed her more masculine than, because I also
they put her in blazers and
like button downs
and things like that is what they were saying, and they were categorizing it as more masculine dress, but still emphasizing like her legs and stuff. I don't think so. Okay. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen Elementary either.
I gotta admit, I don't like CBS shows, so Elementary isn't something that really drew me in. But I do know several people to watch it and say it's a fun portrayal of
trauma. Yeah, I mean it definitely is interesting. Is it one of the first gender swap Watson?
I think so.
Okay.
Now they.
I mean, big media. I'm sure maybe in Japan they, of course, in Japan they've gender swapped Watson and Sherlock. There was one of the.
I remember that one. Yeah, I think she's the first one to be gender swapped in the.
Interesting.
In the portrayal, at least in Western portrayals of it.
Cool.
They also focus on, if I remember right, someone was telling me that the way the show is different than a lot of Sherlock's is that Sherlock is, he's kind of like a trust fund rich kid, like who's had a drug problem in that show.
Oh, okay.
And Joan Watson is his, like, the therapist that he has to go see.
Oh.
Like, she's a court ordered.
Oh, so she's not a doctor.
She is a doctor.
Yeah, but a doctor of psychiatry.
Right, that's an MD.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but she's not like a med...
So the difference is psychiatrists can prescribe, which she is a medical doctor, whereas psychologists can't.
Yeah.
Usually that's a PhD.
But with the original Watson...
She's not like
Watson.
A hospital. Like, yeah. She's a higher class, like, private doctor.
Yeah. You know? With Watson, he went to, you know, in the army for...
Yeah, he was a... he's a doctor in BBC Sherlock. He's just...
Yeah.
He's coming back from Afghanistan because he served in the military.
Yes, he served in the military as, like, a doctor
right.
who saw fallen soldiers.
Okay.
Yeah. So, while you're doing the whole Watsons through time, I ended up going and... pretty much watching the costume exhibition, which was fantastic. I took lots of pictures, which I will be giving to Zach.
To put on Facebook.
Put on Facebook. So, you know, people who are following us on Facebook, you will definitely see all those photos. Some of the photos to note, the people who put on the burlesque show actually participated in this exhibition, and they dressed up as the members of the cartoon Voltron, the one that Netflix put out, the most current one.
Legendary Defender.
Yes, yeah. Legendary Defender. But they were in their bunny versions.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was really cute to see. there was a great Marty and... why am I blanking on these names? Back
Doc.
To the Future. Doc and Marty. They were actually a couple.
Which was funny. Like, I like watching or seeing good crossplay.
Yeah.
Very funny. They did very well also in what we'll talk about a little bit later, the karaoke.
Karaoke, yeah. So the guy who was, I guess, dressed up as Doc, he had that same facial expression.
Yeah, he was very good at the Christopher Lloyd, like,
of just opening his mouth, like, we gotta go!
We gotta go, Marty!
Yeah. It's funny, I keep on wanting to say Rick and Morty since they're based off of that. That was the first time I saw the Doctor Strange, who was phenomenal. The guy had, like, all the right particular outfit. He had the glowing time stone.
It was like movie quality props.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely amazing. There were Sherlocks, of course, because you have to have the Sherlocks.
That's Sherlock.
Yeah. There were some characters from books, from War and Peace, which was really cool. And it was basically, you walked into the room and you could sign up. Yeah. And there was no sort of...
Oh, so it wasn't like Masquerade where it's like you have to sign up the day before.
Nope, it was not like that.
You just show
and
up and
you can show up and you can dress. And even if you had like an OC, an original character, you could go up there and show off your contest.
Yeah, you were showing me pictures of the Kylo Ren inspired by Assassin's Creed.
Creed, yeah.
That was a really cool costume.
Yeah, so it wasn't Kylo Ren. He didn't dress up as Kylo Ren. It was a mixture between influences from Kylo Ren in Star Wars and Assassin's Creed, but it was his own personal character, which was, you know, really cool that they were really open to that. Again, you know, this wasn't a contest that no one won anything. It was just a platform to show off the costume that you put together.
Which is good, because, I mean, I think that that does a lot to inspire a sense of community within the con, of, like, everyone being invested in the things that they like and interested in,
yeah,
and sharing that with other congoers.
Because you don't have that, like, I've got to win.
Making it a competition would completely undermine that.
Yeah, where you're just basically showing off your love of your particular fandom,
mm-hmm,
and your love just happens to be through cosplay.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. I thought that was really great. There were a lot of great costumes. And again, it was in the main ballroom, so there were a lot of folks just there watching people. They gave the front row to people who wanted to take pictures. So you didn't, like, have to have a press badge. If you just wanted to, you know, take a lot
take
of pictures,
yeah,
you could just sit in that front row and take pictures.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, again, they were just open to folks enjoying people's respect and enjoyment of cosplay. So I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a good take on the whole costuming thing, and major props. Also, it was really nice because at the end of it, if you wanted to take more pictures of an individual group, a lot of them just stayed in the hallway and you could take photos of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
We did Potterlock AUs.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Potterlock AUs was a mixture of Harry Potter and Sherlock alternate universes, which is a fan fiction-y thing. That was interesting. Fan fiction is something that I'm, like, I don't read. I've never really read it. And I've never really written it. But it's a topic that I'm kind of fascinated with because it's interesting how passionate a lot of the people are about fan fiction, that the amount of time that they spend doing it.
Yeah,
to get what media in their head out there into the world that they want to see, and usually it's like it's a mashup or a crossover, like this with Harry Potter and Sherlock.
Yeah,
it's an interesting take.
It is, and they keep one of the main key points that they were making was those two worlds are really interchangeable. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of crossover in them, and they kind of mesh really well.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought that was fun.
Yeah, it's always good to hear people who are passionate about what they're doing.
Yeah, because writing's no joke. I mean, sitting down after a long day of work and just sitting in front of your computer and writing, it definitely can be therapeutic. But, you know, at the end, you have to go through and make sure that you're editing it correctly and all that stuff to just put it out there for everybody. And that takes determination and, you know, believing in your particular work. So
yeah.
Major props to people who put out that.
Yeah. 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 There was one panelist there. She was saying she was working on something. She's not done with it yet.
It's 5 years.
5 years. I can't imagine working on something for 5 years and still having more to do and knowing you have more to do.
Yeah.
That is definitely dedication.
Yeah, it's a great undertaking.
Yeah. So props to her.
Yeah. Yep.
At 8, like you were saying, we went to
Flavortown. Whew. So this is something that you had pointed out to me. You're like, we should go to this. I was like, huh.
Flavortown is interesting. Again, these are fan created panels. I have never seen a panel at a convention focused solely on Guy Fieri of diners, drive-ins, and dives.
Oh boy. He is the man of the 90s.
When we walked in to let me set up walking into the panel. Yeah.
You're going to set the scene?
I'm going to set the scene. Walking into the panel, it's in the main ballroom. So we're greeted with the back projector screen, back projection screen with pictures and memes of Guy Fieri. And so one of them is him at a convention holding a balloon version of himself. One of them is him dabbing in the kitchen with his sons. Another one is him, it's Photoshopped, obviously. It's him holding a gun to the screen. Just really, really inappropriately Photoshopped Guy Fieri photos. And some of them that were actual photos of him, which is funny. And one of the things they did is they had a kind of a giveaway raffle where, you know, walking into the room, you were given a ticket to potentially win a prize that the panel was giving away. And those were the, you know, some of the doctored photos of Guy Fieri where, you know, he's holding up a giant hot dog, for instance. The other one where he's holding up the twisted balloon version of himself. Very funny stuff there. The main guy running the panel had mentioned that it was his passion to create this thing that he calls the flavor of Flavortown after, you know, perusing a fan fiction site and hoping to find something ridiculous like Food Network hosts doing crossover stuff. And he was shocked and amazed to find that there was none, but there was one called Winner Winner Chicken Dinner about Guy Fieri. And it's G-rated, so you can go out and read it. It's an interesting fan fiction.
Yeah, it definitely inspired some emotions in me.
Yeah, so. And it may be pronounced Fieri. The panelists were saying Fieri, so I'm assuming that they know how it's pronounced. Another instance, they read a review of his failed Times Square restaurant that might give you some insight into why this restaurant failed.
God, it was magnificent. Whoever took the time to write that review.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was
wow.
Like a 10-minute reading. That's an in-depth review of this restaurant. There was a review of his flame shirt.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was his flame shirt.
Well,
I think it was
a
just
flame shirt similar to the one that he normally wears.
Yeah.
One of the panelists made the good point that with Fieri, he's like a man who the 90s never left in his general vicinity. So like he's got those frosted tips.
Then they'll never grow out.
He's got those.
They'll never grow out.
He's got those Oakley sunglasses.
Yep.
The bowling ball or the bowling shirt.
Yeah. And I mean, he still thinks it's super cool to wear your sunglasses on the back of your head. That's how cool he is.
Now, and you know, they were quick to point out, like, yes, this is a thing celebrating the ridiculousness that he is. But they also pointed out, which I was glad to see, because I was wondering if they were going to do it. Because I know my experiences of reading about Fieri online have been, like, everyone making fun of him. But you read these other things, and it's like, yeah, he and a couple of other chefs, when gay marriage was legalized, ordained so many marriages. I think it was like 100 or 101
marriages
in Florida.
He's ridiculous, but he is super nice.
He does charities all the time. He feeds firefighters during the LA fires. He feeds people refugees.
Yeah, Katrina, he went down and
he's food. A very giving guy, and he may act ridiculous, but
His heart's in the right place.
Yeah, he's still a good dude.
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting to see because I'm sure he sees all the memes of himself.
Yeah. I mean, he can't not.
Yeah, like, and he takes it in stride. Like, I don't think any of it really phases him. I think he's more elated to see that people are talking about him.
Yeah.
About getting hyped and everything. Because what people still will recommend his restaurants. One of the panelists said that she was here in Atlanta, and as she was driving in her Uber car, the guy was like, yeah, you know, pretty much any place that guy recommends, great place to go to.
Yeah. And one of the like, he's very thorough with his show, because the one panelist in Chicago, she's just like, I have never gone out of my way to go to a restaurant that he's been to, but everywhere in Chicago, there's a menu item on there that you can order that he makes.
That he makes.
The restaurant in the town that I'm from, The Beacon, which I gave the lady Sparkle City dap for also being from
Dapper
Sparkle
Dab.
City. Dapper Dab. That restaurant, since he has been there on his show, the thing he made was a peanut butter and banana burger from The Beacon. And she had a hilarious story that she shared about ordering said sandwich from The Beacon. If you are ever in South Carolina, go to The Beacon and order the Guy Fieri burger.
There you go. Because people won't be angry at you, the people who are making it.
Yeah. So it was just a good time. Everyone was having fun.
Yeah, it was a strong panel. People had their energy up. I would definitely say my experience of Guy Fieri is from the Colonnade. If you're ever here in Atlanta, you can go to the Colonnade, and they've got a big old poster of his face just looking at you where he signed it. Because, man, that's
awesome.
He loved the Colonnade. Yeah.
I've never been there.
Oh, it's good. I mean, it's like soul food.
Yeah.
And then apparently his face is all over the Marietta Diner.
Yeah.
He is there. He's eating most of the food there. So they've got like his little thumbs up next to his particular items that he loves. That man, I mean, he loves food. He loves the flavor.
He's the king of Flavortown.
He is the king of Flavortown. But yeah, the panel was great. The people there were fantastic. They had a high energy. People were just cracking up. It was fun. And the funny thing was, it was also in the main ballroom. So people knew that this was going to be a big draw.
Yeah. This panel was amazing. The panelists, you know, we're aware of the good side and the ridiculous side of Guy.
Yeah.
And
All the memes.
But they also knew the good stuff that he does.
Yeah.
So it was good to see that presented and then actually comment on that.
Yeah. How he's a good guy. Because, you know, we can make fun and we can laugh, but he's a good dude doing good things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we went to the podcasting panel.
Yeah, because you know what? We've got a podcast.
Yeah. If you didn't know, if you were listening to this and you did not realize we had a podcast, how did you find this? The panelists there, they all knew their stuff.
Yeah. There was a person from the first panel that we went to on Friday from Steven Universe. Mm-hmm. She has a
Star Wars podcast where they're watching through all of the animated series.
Yeah, so Clone Wars, and then they're going to move on to Rebels.
Yeah,
you grabbed their cards.
Yes,
so,
yeah. Which I'll include a link to them in the show notes.
Yeah.
Then there
was the guy from Geek Versus.
Yes, the guy from Geek Versus,
who was also really funny.
Another lady that had a podcast called Return to the Hellmouth, where mm-hmm. they redo an episode by episode rewatch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which my wife is currently doing with one of our friends who has never seen it.
Nice.
And
then there was also the Baker Street Babes.
Baker Street Babes and the Three Patch Society. Yes. Both of them were there.
Mm-hmm. So it was a nice, and it was interesting because you had different podcast people there. So you had some who were more of a conversational podcast like we do.
Yeah.
And then there were some who were more story-based where it's like a fiction where they're basically doing a radio sort of deal.
Right. And I have to say again, I know it's going to come off as a broken record, but I love how positive this clan is.
Yeah.
Like the...
I mean, that's the big takeaway from... I mean, there was a lot of fun stuff to do, but the positivity of the con.
Yeah.
Everybody that we ended up talking to was super happy to talk to us.
Yeah, the positivity for the podcasting panel, it comes from, you know, all of the panelists were like... You know, people were asking questions of, like, what's the best microphone to get? And it's like, well, you can spend $6,000 on a microphone, or you can use the phone you have in your pocket and record to it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm... Let me dispel some of the magic behind this podcast.
No.
We're recording it on a voice recorder. We do not have a $6,000 mic rig.
We don't. I mean, it may come as a surprise because of our high quality voices.
Yeah, right. But you know, like they were encouraging to people of any different budget, and the point was, you want your voice out there. Whatever story you're telling, it's your story. Just get out there and do it.
Yeah, just do it. I mean. Like Nike said, just do it.
Just do it.
So, you know, that's, it's great to hear that. It's great to hear that, like, you know, go out there, put out your voice, talk about what you do, be passionate about this. I mean, I really enjoy doing this cast because it's a great time just to hang out and talk. You know, I'm glad that we have fun time.
Yeah.
And it would suck, like, coming here and thinking this is a job. Coming here and going, like, oh, my God, I've got to do
this thing.
Yeah.
No, the podcasting panel, it was just super supportive of anyone, willing to answer questions.
Yeah.
Which is good, and I think part of it is because it's at a smaller convention. Like, I've been in a podcasting panel before where, like, not on the panel, but attending one, at larger conventions, and... One of the panelists at 221 BCon referenced gatekeeping in a lot. And that's what the larger cons panel did. It's a lot of like, well, you know, yeah, it's okay to record on your phone, but there needs to be a certain level of quality. And it's like, no. If you want to pay for the space to host it, then host it and put it out there. If you want to put it up on YouTube.
Yeah, or people will like look down at you and be like, oh, you're a conversational podcast. That's not really fun because, you know, you have this conversation and people don't get all their information at one point in time. It's like, no, again, that's gatekeeping. Like, we're going to do our thing.
If you don't like it,
you don't have to listen. It's not like we're forcing you to listen to it. So
I love how, again, how positive all of the panelists were, how supportive they are of each other. And, you know, we had a conversation with one of the panelists that spilled out into the hallway because he was just showing it. Yeah, no, here's this podcaster support group.
Yeah. And he took the time and dedication just to like talk to us and try to make sure that, you know, we had all the resources and the available knowledge for us because
had a conversation with us about it. Cause we were talking about, you know, using music before and after things and laughing about certain situations and whatnot. But it was good to interact with someone who has obviously been doing it a fair amount longer and is more experienced.
Yes, because he's been in our shoes. He started off at a podcast. Everybody starts off at a podcast. It's not like you put out a podcast and magically you're huge. Yeah, you're the biggest.
Unless you're Chris Hardwick.
I guess. If you're a big name, sure, yeah, you can do pretty much anything and be like, hey, I'm doing this, and people will follow you.
And then the last thing we did was the karaoke.
Oh god, the karaoke, that was fun.
I will say the karaoke was super fun, and I hate that we had to leave so far before it ended, but I've attended,
we were there for a while.
We were there for about an hour
hour and a half.
I've been to karaoke at a couple of other cons, and because people keep adding another song and coming up and adding another song and adding another song, it's very easy to say, oh yeah, we'll start this at 10 o'clock and then it ends at like 4 in the morning.
Yeah, and again, it's like you go up to it and you put down your name and you're like, oh, what's the wait time? Well, 2.5 hours. I don't really want to sit here for 2.5 hours. But of course, I love performing, so I was like, I'm going to sign up because I love to sing horribly, and I love to perform. Yeah. And again, it was great to see everybody because everybody is a familiar face. You've seen these people before. You've talked to these people. So it's not like you're going up there and singing in front of a bunch of randos that you've never seen before. Again, the people from the burlesque show were there. There were a lot of panelists that were there who just wanted to sing and sing along and things like that.
Yeah.
People that you made friends with while you were sitting at the panel and interacting with people. So it makes it more comfortable. I will say, you know, sometimes, yeah, I get nervous. You know, it's a natural thing when you're performing and stuff like that. But I wasn't as nervous being up there, just, again, knowing that people are supportive, people, you know, really do care, and you've met these people before, so they're going to cheer for you. And so I did my performance of...
Can I share who and which song you were doing?
Sure.
Okay, so... So if any of you listening were there at the karaoke,
oh,
Stuart
was
the person in the dress and the rainbow wig
you got
who performed Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Yeah. So, again, you know, it, with it being such a open, like, well-known LGBTQ sort of deal, I decided, hey, why not throw on a wig and a dress? It's fun.
And sing Queen.
Because why not?
All of that's awesome.
Yeah. And I was running around. I was doing a performance. I was being silly. There might have been some alcohol in me. I don't know. That's PG, right?
Well, and you said that you didn't know. Yeah, that's PG. Okay. You said you didn't notice it because you were probably out of breath from running around. Because I will say, for as little as you sounded like Freddie Mercury, you made up for it with your performance.
Yeah.
Because
it's hard to hit Freddie Mercury.
Well, you didn't hear it, you said, but like there were people cheering and whooping and clapping after you.
Good.
It was obviously, you know, well received.
Well, good.
It was
a
very good performance.
Yeah, I mean, I can
running
definitely
around air guitar solo, sitting next to someone and like crooning to them.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not a great singer. I'm probably not even close to a great singer. And Freddie Mercury being the fantastic singer.
Yeah, being the fantastic singer, Freddie Mercury.
I was nowhere close to that, but it's fun because, again, these people are people that you've met before. You don't feel embarrassed. You don't feel like you have to kind of shy away from this performance. So, yeah, I put it together. There were a bunch of great performances while we were doing there.
A lot of stuff I was unfamiliar with. I was only familiar with it because of who the songwriter was.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, like a lot of... There was a lot of My Chemical Romance, which I'm not as familiar with them because I'm older than the listening crowd for them.
Yeah.
Like, I was outside of the target market of the band, but good songs,
good
performances.
And there was a great, whoever signed up for I'll Make a Man Out of You from Mulan.
From Mulan.
They put their name plus everybody, so they were just trying to get people up
on
there.
The stage.
Yeah.
I was like, that stage is gonna break if everyone in this room stands on it.
They weren't all standing on it. Because again, a lot of people, when they did their performance, they weren't just standing up on the stage. They were getting out in the audience. They were getting people to participate. And people were participating, people were singing along, people were enjoying it. It wasn't just you were singing to a bunch of people. people were interacting, people were having fun, and it was great. It was a good time. I've seen very few of that where people are interactive, the audience is moving, people are singing with the person singing. A lot of times it's just somebody up there singing.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, again, it was in the main ballroom area, so there was a lot of space where people could kind of, like, dance and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
Where, going back to, like, Dragon Con, there's such a limited amount of space. People are kind of crowded. You can't really do much of anything.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much our two-day experience there.
Yeah. So my main takeaway, again, is...
Well, did you want to talk about what people said?
Oh, yeah. We can talk about what people said. And then go to main takeaways.
Yeah. So one of the persons that we talked to, she was a lady who had been there for about 4 years. So this was her fourth year coming back. And she said that she really enjoyed it. She went there for a lot of the fan pass. Just because she wanted to interact with people who had that kind of passion. The main reason that she really enjoyed it was, again, it was a community of people who were really giving and who were really accepting. She said that she would keep on going to it. It's been her fourth year and she's going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that she's pretty much stopped going to a lot of these bigger conventions. She's stopped going to the big, like, Dragon Cons and things along those lines.
Yeah.
Just because she doesn't get that experience that she gets from smaller conventions.
Yeah, and I spoke with someone separately. It was while I was waiting for the Watson panel.
Okay.
That one of the ladies was saying that this was her first ever convention. Yeah. And I was like, this is, you know, from what I've seen so far, this is the best, like, one of the better ways to start out, because it's mm-hmm. it's a smaller convention, there's more community focused stuff, and you know, while still being disparate enough that if you're coming with, you know, a partner or a friend or whatever, you can find something to do at all times that might appeal to you.
Because there was actual little downtime that we had.
Yeah.
Going from panel to panel.
Yeah, it was difficult for me, at least, to look at the schedule and go, okay, when am I going to fit in lunch here?
I mean, those were our main things, was, like, going and getting dinner or going and talking to people mm-hmm. because we wanted to get some people's opinion on the convention.
Yeah. And another person was saying that they had stopped going to... Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never been to Dragon Con, but they had stopped going to Comic-Con because it was too crowded, and they, for whatever reason, had developed crowd anxiety. And so they only... And I remember seeing her at Conjuration, but she was saying that, yeah, she only goes to the smaller, like, local conventions because she can manage the crowds better, because there aren't a lot of people jamming you forward trying to get into a room. Like, people will take the time to stop and go, oh, hey, how are you? Have a conversation in the hall.
Yeah.
It's very laid back, which is great.
Yeah, and again, it's that whole movement. Like, this con's layout was great.
Yeah. 221 Decon, excellent.
Yeah.
Highly recommend.
We also talked to one of the security members there.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, again... His big thing was, you know, his main thing is checking IDs on 18 and up panels.
Yeah.
He said that there's rarely ever an incident where he has to go and, like, break something up.
Yeah.
I
can't see that at this con, because this con, like, there wasn't that atmosphere
at
this one.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes at other conventions, there's a certain atmosphere after a certain time of day where it's just like, okay,
anything
like
goes.
Something's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Whereas this con was super supportive of all of the attendees.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone treated each other like family.
Yeah.
There were even the badge stickers going around that said fandom is family, which I like that sentiment.
Yeah. So it was interesting to get his take, because he said that he had done security for other conventions, even mm-hmm. Dragon Con, and he said that this is one of his favorite conventions, because it's so laid back, so family. And yeah, he really enjoyed it. He actually showed us a list of all the cons.
All the cons he was going to.
I mean, God bless him. He, he's got like one every month. Yeah. And it's crazy because he usually works at most of those conventions.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing that.
Yeah. So it, a lot of the feeling I got from people talking was, yeah, it was a safe place and it was a family.
Mm-hmm.
And they really enjoyed it. I couldn't find anyone really who wasn't having a good time.
Yeah. Now, I will say, was that all?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You had?
Unless you had something that...
No, all I was going to say is I would... I've already got on my calendar for next year, April 5th through 7th, mm-hmm. 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting old. April 5th through 7th of 2019 is when the next one is.
Yeah.
It's also at the Atlanta Airport Marriott. You can find out more about their information at www.221bcon.com. That's 221 B, C as in cat, O as in Oscar, N as in Nancy.com. Their prices are reasonable. They even have eternal memberships with the Diogenes Club, where you get a access, expedited registration, con t-shirt every year, an admittance to a pre-con party for other guests.
Yeah.
$350.
Not bad.
That's not a bad price at all.
Yeah.
You know, and the con offers enough that that's a good deal. So hopefully we'll see some of you guys next year.
Yeah.
If you see us in the hall, give us a wave.
Yeah, definitely. Come up. We're super approachable. We love talking to people. Mm-hmm. I love talking to people. I will talk your ear off. I'll make the funnies maybe. Maybe, or it could just be.
Not yeah.
Funny. But yeah, so main takeaway.
I mean, I think I've said it. I've beaten into the ground, I guess, of of super positive, super supportive. Mm-hmm. Everyone is super into what they're into, and they love sharing it with other people in a good way.
Yeah. It's definitely the passion. Just people there are super passionate. Again, you know, people who were there for business stayed there for fun just because this is their thing. This is what they enjoyed. I mean, and it was the same for us. We were there on business, but we super enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah, super enjoyed ourselves. Yeah. I'm looking forward to going back next year.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And yeah, highly recommend it.
Yes, highly recommend. So awesome. That was this episode for convention coverage.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the next one will be because I know these come out irregularly, but our regular show is still posted through Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
At Back Row Super Show. It's four separate words.
Yeah. And if you want to contact us, you can always contact us
at backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Yeah, we always look forward to feedback, to people saying positive things, people giving mm-hmm. us constructive criticism.
Yes.
Yeah, we're
Also on Facebook.
Yep.
Back Row Super Show. You'll notice a theme here.
Yeah, and we'll have those pictures up. So if you're interested in seeing the pictures from the convention, you know, definitely jump on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I guess for our regular show stuff, the next episode should be Hearthstone.
Okay.
And the current book club book is Michael Crichton's Eaters of the Dead.
Ooh, yeah.
So yeah. That'll come up just as soon as Stuart finishes reading it.
And yeah.
I'll also reread it because there's a lot of nuance in that book, more than you'd expect.
So, yep, yep.
We'll see you guys here. We all come to the same RSS feed, so it's just Apple Podcasts, Back Row Super Show.
Exactly. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye. Good time. I feel alive.